you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Well, hello, everybody. The podcast is back. Rory McIlroy, Carson Daly. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you.
Got a lot
Thanks
coming
for making
up.
The trip.
Thank you for having me in your hometown of Jupiter, Florida.
Delighted to have you here.
This is beautiful. So we're going to talk a little bit about Florida golf. You've had a little time off since the Masters. Lots to talk about the Masters. Your
Indeed.
Week. Tiger's big comeback.
Mm-hmm.
Love to talk a little bit about the prep for the PGA, Bethpage, Long
sure.
Island,
yeah.
around my neck of the woods. We're also going to get into some new stuff. A new segment coming up on the podcast.
Yep.
A little New York versus LA.
I like that.
And maybe guests. Should we have guests on the podcast? I want to pick your brain about that as well.
Yeah.
Episode 3 of the Rory Carson podcast starts now. Well, we're back with the podcast, episode 3, Carson Daly, Rory McIlroy. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you.
It's kind of like episode 4, but you went and we've done a couple of these, but you went and won the Players.
Yeah.
So we had
it
a little
was a
reboot.
virtual podcast.
It is good to see you. We're here in Jupiter, Florida, a place I've never been to before. What percentage of the tour lives in this area? Is it half?
No, I don't think it's quite half, but it's definitely, I mean, it's probably half of the top 10 in the world. Right now, I would say.
Right.
But half, I would say, yeah, a good 15% of the tour.
There's golf everywhere around here, and a lot of the tour players live here in Texas, I know, too. There's a lot of people that
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's good weather. There's great golf courses here. Obviously, taxes are non-existent, so that helps.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people try to take advantage of that during their careers. But it's good. You know, one of the great things about being down here is – you know, if I want to go and play a competitive game of golf with Ricky or Justin Thomas or Tiger.
Right, they're your neighbors.
DJ,
you can.
Yeah, exactly. So you can go and you can play and you can get a gauge of where your game's at compared to theirs.
Well, we're here in Jupiter. It's lovely. It's my first time here. We're here really because you live here. You've had a little bit of time off. I want to go back into the Masters week for a second. But just tell me quickly, how was the break? I mean, you're having such a great year.
Yeah.
Is the break a needed thing, or do you ever worry that you might lose a little momentum?
No, I think with the way the schedule change has worked this year, obviously the PGA Championship going from August to May, you're sort of needing to build these little mini breaks into the season. The season's got so condensed. So, you know, really the bulk of the season is, you know, March through to August.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm playing 12 of the next 15 weeks or something crazy like that. So I needed a little break just to sort of refresh and reset. It's almost like that mini season is over, the first 8 or 9 events of the year, and then you have a little break, and then you've got this next run going into the summer, and then it's like
you need it.
You do need a hiatus.
Yeah,
it is, exactly. And I think it's healthy to get away from it for a little while as well.
Let me just go back for a second. People listening who haven't joined the podcast before, this is something that you and I came together on for Golf Pass. Just a quick reminder for people. And really to give you a kind of a forum to just bypass where you can just talk directly to your fans and to your friends and to people who follow you and want to hear straight from the horse's mouth what's going on in your life. So we do this now once a month, and we've done it from all over, and we'll continue to do so for the rest of the year. But, you know, I was watching the press conference at the Masters. I know after the Masters you didn't want to do a press conference, but this is really your press conference, this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the great thing about this is it's not – anything that I say is it's right here. It's
right.
Not going to be misconstrued or taken out of context in any way. This podcast is for obviously Golf Pass members that are avid fans of the game and maybe fans of me. And as you said, straight from the horse's mouth and you know, trying to give them something that they mightn't get just through a normal media outlet.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, I'm a huge fan of the game. People know me from MTV or from The Voice on NBC and the various shows that I host, but I've been in radio my whole life since I'm 18 years old, so talking behind the microphone, I actually prefer this form of communication.
Mm.
I think it's sort of its purest for people to listen to us.
Yep, I agree.
And I'm also a huge fan of golf. Grew up around the game in Southern California. Grew up with Tiger being his chaperone many times. Knew his family very well. His father and my father were very close. So I come to it with nothing but pure love for the game and being a fan of yours and so many of all of you guys on tour. So that's kind of our background. Let's go to the Masters for a second. You went in, obviously having a great start to your season, but also at Augusta, a place where you were top 10 five times straight heading into this year. What was your mindset going in? You probably thought, and I know there's so much about the career Grand Slam, but you perspectively, you've put things in perspective so well now.
Yeah, it's a, you know, I think Augusta is going to be my, you know, it's going to be the biggest obstacle for me to overcome in my career. I had a great chance to win it a few years ago. I didn't take that opportunity. And, you know, every year that passes is just going to make it that little bit tougher.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year, again, I feel like I come out of Augusta every year, you know, not winning, but with so many positives. And even this year, I didn't have my best tournament, but, you know, I made 15 birdies and 3 eagles, which was a high number. You know, I was 21 under par for those holes. You know, if I just could have limited the mistakes, you know, I would have been right there. You know, I made 16 bogeys. You know, I cut that to 8 bogeys, and I would have been tied at 13 under with Tiger. So
it's funny you do that as a pro. As an amateur, we do that. I look back, you were essentially 8 shots out of the lead.
Yeah,
that's 2 shots per round. Mm-hmm. Do you look at it like that and go back and go, God, where did those 2 shots come from Thursday to Sunday?
Yeah, and you think about it, 2 shots is nothing really in a round of golf. It's a couple of missed putts. It's a bad iron shot here. It's a bad break.
I mean, Augusta, especially if you don't hit your spots on the greens, did you feel like you got some bad breaks?
Yeah, I there was a couple times my patience was tested on the Friday for sure. You know, and the conditions at Augusta this year were a little different than previous years because they had the women's amateur there on Saturday. They tried to keep the course sort of soft. And then what ended up happening was a soft golf course combined with the storms and the rains they had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of the tournament week, they never were able to get the golf course back to the way they wanted it to play.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was a bit different for everyone. The rough was slightly longer than it usually is. Greens were softer, slower. It was just for me it was a different Masters than previous years.
Yeah, that Sunday you played well. You shot 68 on the backside. I mean, you played great.
Yeah.
I mean, when I play with my friends and I'm playing like crap and I have a good 18th hole, like it's just enough to keep you coming back for more. Is it similar with you? I mean, did you take anything positive away from your Sunday round?
I did. I mean, it's, you know, the position I was in is not where you envision at the start of the week. You don't want to be teeing off the back nine on Sunday completely, you know, nowhere near the lead. But I think it was a good reminder as well. I mean, all the pressure was off. I had nothing to lose. I went out there and I played a great round of golf. So it's, how do I get myself to feel that way on the first tee on Thursday?
Right.
You know, that is...
You want to be in that relaxed environment.
That is sort of... How can I get myself into that state on the first tee on Thursday and not when it's too late on the 10th tee on Sunday?
Aside from telling yourself on Thursday, well, this doesn't matter, I'm out of it, like trying to get into that mindset, I guess, how do you do that?
You got to, you know...
Without telling yourself.
No, exactly.
There's no pressure here, but this doesn't matter.
But I think if you tell yourself that too much, it creates another sort of pressure.
Yeah.
You know, it indirectly creates some pressure. So I think it's embracing it, embracing the fact that, you know, this is a big tournament and I know that I have the capability. If I can control what I can control, I have a good chance to do well. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win, because some guy might just go out and play better.
Yep.
But you give yourself the best chance.
In one word, how did you feel when you left Augusta on Sunday about the week? Pissed, frustrated, hopeful?
Hopeful and inspired.
Yeah,
I was inspired by, you know, I left the golf course, we got back to the rental home, and I watched the last 4 or 5 holes and obviously saw what happened with Tiger, and I'm, you know, I was like...
How did you feel about that?
So, it was a strange, you know, my thing was, you know, there was a couple of Europeans up there, Francesco Molinari, Poulter, you know, I would have loved to have seen one of those guys win. Not that I was rooting against Tiger at all, but... because it's such a cool thing for golf to see that. But I was just, my thing is the amount of hype that's going to be around if Tiger wins this thing is going to be off the charts. But then once he won, I was like, this is just the most unbelievable thing for our sport. You know, and I sort of took myself out of it and how it was going to, you know, sort of influenced me in any way. And I just saw
for what it was,
golf as a whole. Yeah. And I'm like, this is,
it was
just
crazy.
It was crazy. It was unbelievable. And I think the human emotion, like I cried whenever, you know, he hugged Charlie and the whole, it was so emotional. And I think a lot of people, you know, I was sitting beside my wife, Erica, and I could see the tears going down her.
The country was crying.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. So, you know, from me, like, being disappointed that Francesco hit it in the water at 12 or on 15 or Poulter didn't make a run, or to just this emotion at the end and being, you know, I felt like I was a 10-year-old kid again, yeah, watching Tiger win the Masters like he did almost, I feel like, every year that I watched it. And
that's a cool feeling.
It was like going back in time. It was unbelievable.
I never thought, and I've known Tiger Mahal, I never thought he'd get his game back to that. I thought it would be a tough, it'd be hard for him to win again. Just
yeah.
win again.
Yeah.
And then never mind a major. And then on top of that, never mind the Masters, which for him is everything. But to put that green jacket on again, when he was in Butler's cabin and Pat put it on him, I was like, oh my God, here we go. What a throwback in time.
I think as well,
it was really cool.
It was unbelievable. And I think as well, with Augusta and the Masters, it is like a protective cocoon for him compared to what he has to deal with any other week. Yeah. So the only people allowed inside the ropes on tournament days are the players, the caddies, and like one cameraman. Other golf events, it's players, caddies, media people. Like it's like there's so much more noise and movement that goes on in a normal tournament. So it provides Tiger a respite from what he has to deal with week in, week out. And he knows that golf course so well. And I mean, I said it the other day to someone, I could see him being competitive there for the next ten years.
Yeah, I can too. Yeah. And for him and his comeback, it's like he wins it on the PGA Tour again, and it's still the media, still with the like, is he really back? Like, is he back? And like, and everybody would say, well, he has to win a green jacket to close the question. And it really finally did at least shut that door on that question. Like, is he back? He's wearing a green jacket. Of course he's back.
Yeah.
But the insatiable appetite of the media is you have to deal with all the time. God bless them all. I'm a part of it. Is now they don't even let the body like get warm. It's still warm. And they're like, oh, he's going to win at Bethpage because he's won there before. Yeah. He's going to win overseas at the Open Championship.
He won at Pebble Beach by 15 strokes.
He won at Pebble Beach. Thank you, producer Ron. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
So it never really ends.
It doesn't, because he has to live up to these expectations that, you know, people see the 2000 US Open. They see Bethpage in 02, but they have to realize that he is a different player. He has to do things differently now to win golf tournaments. He can't overpower Bethpage like he did back then. He needs to, you know, he needs to play chess a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't hit the ball quite as long, but he hits it in play more. He can rely, he's still the best iron player in the game. So if he relies on his iron game and puts it in play, he's going to have a chance most places that he plays. But Pebble Beach, yes, he's got a wonderful chance there. Bethpage, I'm not so sure. It's cold in New York that time of year. You know, it's the rough is thick. It's a long golf course. You know, does he have it? You know, he might.
He always has a puncher's chance.
Yeah, I mean, of course he does. But, you know, if I was to, you know, pick another place for him to do really well this year, it would be Pebble.
Right.
I think it sets up so good for the way he plays the game right now.
Just a little bit more on the Masters. I felt like there was some real, I felt like the spirit of Earl Woods was in the trees on 12. You know, let's just go back to that moment of what happened on Sunday down the stretch.
Mm.
And I don't know if I was the only one, but I was watching the tournament going, there's something. We always wait for the back nine, right? I mean, that's what us golf fans, we wait for Amen Corner. We wait to see these finishes. Two-shot lead means nothing going down the stretch. But when Tiger was on 11 and hit it right again and then made a great shot into 11, something was happening on 12 with Brooksy hitting into the water and Pulte hit into the water. And I've never seen – so great, granted, two PGA players with a pitching wedge in their hand or a 9-iron hit it into the water. Now, just as an amateur, that seemed weird that – because someone hits in front of you and you think you'd learn from it. Hey, should I take a little more?
Yeah.
Look like he took a direct path. Maybe I go left also. Mm. Then that happens.
Finau as well. I mean,
Finau, as long as anybody
on the tour, you know, and he ended up going in the water too.
But to my point, four PGA Tour pros hit it in the water, including Molinari. And I felt like that was the spirit of Earl Woods just pushing balls down. And then here comes Tiger.
Well, I mean, strange things do happen there, whether for you or against you. Go back to Freddie Couples in 92, the ball stays up on the bank, he gets it up and down, he goes to win.
This is 100 and how long is that shot?
It was like a 155 maybe.
Okay, so it's a wedge,
it was like a nine iron. I hit 9 iron in, granted I played the hole a lot earlier than they did, and maybe not there wasn't as much wind. But the thing is about the 12th hole at Augusta, you could be on the tee box there. The flag on the 11th hole could be blowing straight down. And then you look at the flag on the 12th green and it'll be going straight into you. And you're like, where is this wind coming from?
Earl Woods.
It could. Yeah. Hey, you know,
it just felt like something magical was happening.
When
Molinari hit in the water, they got a great camera shot on CBS of Tiger was right behind him. Like you could see him.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
You know? So
the sequence of events was Molinari hit it into the water first, and then Tiger played safe over the bunker. Was that the or did
no
Tiger...
Finau hit first?
Okay,
he?
I don't know.
It was four straight balls in the water.
Okay,
I believe
it went Molinari, Tiger, Tony.
But I think regardless of what they did, Tiger's got so much experience around that golf course.
Right.
Like even that right pin, like a three there is a good. You know, you've got seven holes left to try to win the Masters. A three there isn't going to hurt you.
Yeah.
You don't need to make two.
Yeah.
You know, you rely on your birdie on the 13th, the par five,
right,
and the 15th.
Right. Or if he had a good shot on 16.
Like he did. So, I mean, he played it perfectly. And what he always does and what, you know, he plays his game and lets all the others, you know, disintegrate around him.
God, but that level of disintegration just seemed like out of this world odds-wise. It just
seemed.
And Molinari is so just consistent.
So my thing is, does Tiger go as far left of that pin on 12 if he hits first? You know, if he
right.
had the honor, what would have happened? And I'm just saying, like, it
right.
doesn't. I mean,
I think he was going to go left all the way.
Me too, because
personally.
Because he is, you know, as I said,
he's
got the best course management of anyone.
By the way,
there.
Left of that pin, over the trap, between the traps, how much real estate is there? I mean, it's like nothing. It's
8
like
yards.
Ten paces.
Yeah, 10 yards. Yeah,
it's not
nothing.
An easy shot.
It actually would have been probably an easier. You've got more green to hit if he would have went a little further right.
Yeah,
the green gets deeper on the right side. But then you know you take that short into play, and he didn't want
to
do that.
But
so.
Going back to what you said, you felt when you got back to the rental house and you're watching it, and you let your own round go, you take yourself out of it. Here you are, as a country, here we are in the States. And, you know, it's a flashback in time. Everybody jumped into a time machine and went back. And can it happen again? And it was happening. It was unfolding. And not only was Tiger playing well and consistent, other people, because it takes, you know, lots of other things have to happen. And then he held on to it. And on 16, when he hit the shot, everybody thought he was going to hit a hole in one.
I
mean, he's got mojo on that hole, history on that hole.
Yeah.
That ball could have broken another inch left. It would have been like, literally, it was already the greatest comeback in sports. That would have been the greatest moment in sports.
Yeah.
He has a knack for just the supernatural.
Yeah, he does. And I thought it was so funny on 16 as well. Phelps behind a tee box.
Right.
You see that?
And
Michael
then the
Phelps
lady in the Lily Pulitzer.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I think as well, when it all transpired, it was like his life had, or his career at least, had come full circle.
Yeah.
From walking off that 18th green in 97, hugging Earl, you know, and then...
hugging
what
his
is
kids.
It
22
years later he's hugging his kids, and you know, it's like, and everything that went on in between, great golf, bad golf, injuries, scandals, the whole lot. It was like, not that it made it all worth it, but it had just come full circle, and people have started to see him as a human being again, just like they did in 97.
Right.
And I think it's awesome to have that resilience to go through all that and 22 years later put on the green jacket again.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
One quick inside the game on back on 12, when Tiger hit it left, there was a camera shot, and I wanted to ask you, like, etiquette wise, it seemed like he was over his putt as Tony Finau and Molinari were in the drop area hitting up, and I almost thought, is this gamesmanship? Like, was this Tiger stalking? Like,
just sort of having that little glimpse of red in your eye?
A little bit of, like, I thought, like, maybe he should have backed off, and he was 10 paces away or however far he was from stepping off the green. Does he think like that? Is he trying to, now I'm in these guys' head, I'm going to stand here?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Does he do little things like that?
100%.
Like, where he stands?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he knows that he intimidates people.
Like, I'm
going to
stand right here while these guys hit this
shot
up here.
And you're going to, if I knew that, if I... You know, especially someone like a Tony Finau, who's a lot younger, and you know, Tiger was probably his hero growing up. And it's like, I'm gonna make you feel my presence.
Right. So that's a real thing.
Yeah, and I think as well.
That's cool.
I think one of the things that helped this whole thing is what he wore. that mock neck turtle thing that he came back with. I mean, but people correlate that with that 05 Masters win. And, you know, and it probably made him feel good. Yeah. You know, he puts that back on and it's like he has so many good memories.
Right.
Looking like that.
It's like Superman going into the phone booth and putting a cape on.
Or any of us puts a cape on, we all feel like we have some sort of superpower.
Yeah.
Rory, I would love to know, just from a golf nerd insider, like Molinari gets such a rap in the media as a boring, you know, in his golf, and he just pars courses to death. You've played on a Ryder Cup with him. What is he actually like in the team room? Or is he the same as the media?
He's very chill,
right?
He's very stoic. Yeah. He is very stoic, which I think in golf helps. You know, it's a bit like, it's funny, so you have Francesco, and then I think to balance him out, you have his wife, Valentina. And Valentina is like the complete opposite. You know, she is very, what you would think of a typical Italian woman, you know, very, you know, charismatic and hands everywhere. But Francesco is very much like that. But it's not as if he doesn't, I mean, he's got a great personality. He's very funny. He's a very hard worker. He's a great father. But he's a stoic person. And I think he becomes even more that way on the golf course. And it's hard for people to get anything out of him. But he puts a lot into it, and he's obviously got a lot out of it as well. But I wouldn't necessarily say that's a bad thing. I mean, he has to be who he is to perform at the level he wants to. He can't go out and try to be someone else, because that's not going to work for him.
Right. So Masters ends. What did you do? Put the clubs away?
Yeah, put the clubs away for a while. 10 days.
Is that a long time for you, or is that normal?
It's normal. I sort of like to take those little breaks. I mean, I have no problem getting away from the game. Like,
And what do you like to do?
I don't know if
that's
a good thing or a bad thing.
I
guess...
Do you want to get on the water and go fishing? Do you want
to... Yeah, wanted to get on the beach. The weather down here right now is so perfect that, you know, we get on the beach. We took a couple, like, little, you know, trips to the Breakers Hotel, had a couple spa days.
Right.
It was actually our anniversary last week as well. So that was, we wanted to just sort of, you know, chill out and just have time for ourselves. And that was really it. Just sort of get away, catch up with a few things. We're obviously building this house at the minute, so we were over there quite a bit. But yeah, just try to just get away from the game for a while. And whether that's, you know, doing mundane things like going grocery shopping or whatever. I mean, just something.
Life.
Yeah, life. Just doing life. Yeah.
Right. How was your anniversary?
Yeah, it was nice. We were planning on going away, but our anniversary coincided with Easter.
Yeah.
And anything we tried to book, it was fully booked. So we had like a little staycation where, you know, we're in this condo building at the minute. We're on the beach by the pool. We had dinner. We cooked dinner in, had a nice bottle of wine, and just sort of,
I don't want to pry and get too personal. If I am, it's your podcast. Just tell me to stop. But I know from my experience of being very, very busy and having three kids that when my wife and I, we have to schedule time to talk, right? You got to plan stuff out, trips, family things, life, right? And you need to go there in conversations. 90% of the time, I can't really have a conversation with my wife because there's three tiny humans that look like us driving me freaking crazy. So when we do get a date night, it forces us to have some pretty heavy conversations about things in life.
Yeah.
Do you find that? Does that happen with you and Erica? Do you talk about...
Yeah, I don't... I mean, we...
Family or your future?
100%, but I think it's because we don't have the distractions that maybe...
They are distractions. Are you thinking about having kids?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Well, think harder.
So, but... You know, those conversations happen daily for us because there's no one else around. And I'm very lucky that she can travel with me and we spend a lot of time together.
So you get to exercise that more.
Yeah, well, that's exactly. Good. Yeah.
By the way, on Tiger, shouldn't he just shave his head at this point?
I mean, either that or you go full, whatever the threading, whatever it is to try and get some of it back.
Okay, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
It happened for Joe Biden somehow, I noticed.
We could get him in touch with Urlacher.
Somehow Biden...
Oh, yeah, Urlacher got it done, right? Yeah.
Biden's run for president two other times, and he had less hair then than he does now, which is a weird thing. But
that's
he's Tiger with the hat on, and he puts out on 18. Oh, my God, he won the Masters again. And then as soon as he takes the hat off, I'm like, oh, my God, I could beat that guy.
He's the 43-year-old yes. dad that he is.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
It's sort of, it's, but yeah, he still looks, he still looks like he's Tiger Woods when he's got the hat on.
I just think he would look badass if he just shaved it, you know, but that's me.
Want more Rory and Carson? Head on over to golfpass.com for full video of the show and other originals like My Daily Routine, where top golfers, athletes, and entertainers explain what they do to keep themselves sharp. Watch them all today with a 7-day free trial on golfpass.com.
As much as I could talk about golf, I wondered if we should have some guests on this thing. Because do you listen to other podcasts?
I do. Yeah, I listen to...
Do they have guests?
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Yeah, it depends on the subject and depends what they're talking about. I listen to this podcast called Stuff You Should Know.
Okay.
These two guys from up in like Atlanta, Georgia, I think. And it's literally...
Two guys just talking about what? What
like,
are they talking about?
Like, choose a subject. You know, how they make pottery in... I don't know,
is
Mozambique.
Random?
It's random. It's very random. But it's cool.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's just that you learn. You're learning stuff.
I've never heard a podcast in my life until this one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know what, and I come from like, you know, radio. I'd play like a.
It's usually two dudes like us just rambling.
Right. Okay, that is. Okay, good.
Yeah, so we're doing a good job.
I love it because I love golf and I love to hear like the game within the game. So like
yeah.
When we talk about 12 at the Masters and I ask you, was Tiger, you know, kind of posting up, posturing so that the boys could see him? You know, all that kind of inside the rope talk is fun for me.
Yeah.
So guests, you want to have guests on the show? Who do you like? I'm a well-connected guy in Hollywood.
I know that.
So who would you like me? My Rolodex. Do you know what a Rolodex is, by the way?
I do know what a Rolodex
it's
is,
an old
and I'm sure
my contacts
sure
run
goes
deep.
A long way.
What do you? Who would you like?
So
to
like
have
non golf.
Anybody? Like if I said, hey, we're gonna get somebody on. I'm gonna have somebody call in the next podcast. Who would you be psyched to talk to? Aside from the guys who talk about Mozambique pottery.
I guess they have to be fans of golf, right? Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
No. Okay.
Could be a musician.
Well, that's the thing. So
could
like
an
if
actor?
I like for me straight away, I would think of like Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. Do you know Justin?
Golf.
You know Justin.
I've met him a few times.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think he's a fan of golf. He
nice guy.
Seems like a really good dude.
I've known Justin since he's 12 years old.
Really?
Yeah, with the curls.
Yeah.
Before it, just when NSYNC was happening.
Yeah.
And what would you like to know about Justin?
I'll
know the answer.
Yeah. I just think how he, like, I think he's one of the best performers of the last 20 or 30 years.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've seen him live, and I just think what he's got so much talent, and he's got such a, you know, he can beatbox, he can rap, he can sing, he can dance, he can.
Yeah, that's the secret of his success. He got a hood pass. He got a hood pass when he left NSYNC. I mean, NSYNC, who is the most, the whitest, biggest pop
boy
act in the States, the most bubblegummy.
Yeah.
And he left that and started a career. And he got a hood pass. I mean, because he has soul. He loves R&B.
Yeah.
He showed a completely different side of himself.
Yeah.
And he did it well. And so it opened up a whole new audience for him.
Yeah. And I just think he's just someone that I respect because I don't know him that well, but you look at what he's done in his career.
I mean, he would love to be your best
and then
friend. he would be your best friend. Let's get JT on, Ryan. I can make that happen. I can make that happen. He is a golf fanatic, and he's a super, super nice guy.
Yeah, and I think
and you
as
guys
well
would
that,
be very
you know,
good buddies.
You know, he's a superstar, obviously, and then he's married to a superstar.
Yeah,
but it seems like they have kept this normality about their relationship and their life, which is really cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
I think they attribute that to not living in L.A. I think he loves Tennessee.
Yeah.
You know, he's into this whole thing. Mm-hmm. But you're friends with Niall from One Direction.
Yeah, Niall from One
now,
Direction.
Now, when Niall left One Direction, he also did something similar to JT. He kind of went a different direction, more of a singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
And I love his music.
Yeah, I love his music, too. And he's very talented as well. And he writes all his songs, which I think is obviously another aspect of talent that a lot of musicians don't possess. You know,
true.
They could be great singers.
True.
So to go into the studio and write, and you know, I
hit
text
songs,
them all
great sounding songs.
Great songs and write songs for other people.
So why
know?
Can't you get Niall on the podcast? Can
I'd
you
love
can
to.
You arrange that?
Because
I would that would be somebody I saw him at the Masters
I would love
in
to
Butler
get
Cabin.
On.
And I was going, How is the kid from One Direction in Butler Cabin? And I'm at home in Long Island.
He's very well connected
He is very well connected.
Well,
he was in like shorts.
But he's,
too.
But he's
Did
a
you see that? He was underdressed in Butler Cabin.
But he's
I was
a big,
so jealous.
So he's a massive advocate for golf.
I know he is.
He's got a golf management.
I know he does.
Business.
He just got his first victory.
Yeah, exactly. Over on the European Tour,
awesome.
He's a big. He does a lot of promotion for the drive, chip, and putt at Augusta. So he's, you know, he's big into the game. I think to have these people in golf and be, you know, it brings another demographic in, right? You know, all of Niall's fans, because he likes golf, they have a chance to become fans of golf as well. So I'd love to get Niall on the
So Justin Timberlake and Niall, but we'll start with those two maybe as guests.
Niall's got, I mean, the Irish accent gets you in anywhere. It gets you in Butler Cabin. It gets you,
Yeah, that's true.
How long have you and Niall been friends?
So I met Niall in Sydney in 2013. So yeah, seven years. He was touring with One Direction down there. We actually, I was playing the Australian Open. We were staying in the same hotel.
Were there kids, girls everywhere screaming outside the hotel for them? Yeah. Insane,
like,
right?
Unbelievable. Yeah. Like, just ridiculous. I hadn't seen anything like it. I didn't, One Direction were sort of big. They came from X Factor back in the UK.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, it's a boy band and it'll be a couple of years and then they'll go do their own thing. But, like, how big they were. And that, you know, they were the first real group that used social media the right way. And they were, you know, they got huge just because of Twitter and Instagram and all that sort
Absolutely.
Of stuff.
Absolutely, social media. They were smart. If we wanted to have a guest, Producer Ryan, do we have the technology on this podcast? I mean, this is, there's three of us in here and Tim working the camera. We're, this show cost $8.
It cost $8.90 to make, yeah.
We do have the technology. Can we give out a number?
We can certainly do that, yeah.
You know what we should do is set up a voicemail and get like an 800 number and people can call and tell us what they want out of the podcast.
There you go. Yeah. That'd be a good idea.
You know what I mean? And we'll just go through it and maybe we'll play a couple of them back.
Yeah.
We'll set up a number.
We could absolutely do that. Going back to Timberlake for a minute.
Yeah.
I have heard through the grapevine, and I don't know if this will gel with you, Rory, but that he is a painfully slow golfer.
That doesn't surprise me because he spends a bit of time with Justin Rose.
Yeah.
And Johnny, he's probably learning a little bit from Justin.
What do you do when you're with somebody who plays slow on tour?
It's tough. You just
got
to
say anything, or
so you can say things without saying things. That means, you know, like body language or looks, or but sometimes you have to just say, you know. And the annoying thing is, and this is, I'm a part of the Player Advisory Council on the PGA Tour, so we're meeting next week in Charlotte, and the last subject that we all bring up is what are we going to do about slow play, because we know who the slow players are. And so what happens is you got a slow player in your group, then the group is timed by a referee because they're playing slow. So you're getting all of you are now getting timed. The slow player speeds up for those couple holes, you're getting timed, and nothing gets done about it. And then that puts you under pressure to play faster because you've got this in your head that you're being timed. So we all know who the slow players are. And I think what should happen is instead of you get a warning, and then you get timed, and then if you're being timed and you have one bad time, you get another warning, and then your second bad time is a shot. But I think the process goes too long for that shot to be admitted. I think it should be,
you gotta get to it quicker.
You're being timed, and if you have a bad time, it's a shot,
right?
And that's it, because that'll make players speed up. Even by knowing if they get on the clock, there's a good chance they're going to get a shot penalty.
Right. But, you know, why don't just go to the slow players? We know who they are. I mean, why is that just part of golf and like the why not just go call their man, you know, call Jason Day's agent and just be like, listen, they're sorry, but like you have to do something about it. Let me put it in perspective. In Hollywood, when we shoot The Voice, a TV show on NBC, the singing show, we for a while early on were starting production late. Our production days are multi-million-dollar big stage setups.
So like this?
Big deal. Much like this. Absolutely nothing like this. This is what it looks like when Adam Levine and I do a podcast in my trailer, which we don't. But we go right to him, and we find him.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine LeBron being late to an NBA game. That's what we say to Adam Levine, or who's late, lives a block away.
Yeah.
Like, our production, you can't put us off by an hour. We have crews, OTs, there's a ripple effect. It's not just about the... We go right to them. Why doesn't the tour just go right to these slow players
or
say, guys, step it up.
Or a shot clock. You know, like, like NBA, like, if LeBron, you know, twice a game, you know, fails to get a shot off, you know, in 24 seconds, then, you know, is that, you know, does the team find out? Does what, you know, what happens there? But... You know, a shot clock could be they do it over on the European tour. They have the shot clock masters where it's like every shot is timed.
Right.
And,
you would love that, I know.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a balance, right? Tennis have brought in a timing thing for serving as well.
Yeah.
So there's something that can be done, but it's, I think as well, what's hard, golf courses have become so much more difficult over the past few years. Like, the longest rounds of the year are always the U.S. Open, because you have to take your time over a three-footer.
Right.
Because it's tough and it's tricky and you're playing for a lot of points and money.
Right, those courses
and,
are set up extra hard too.
Yeah, they're right on the edge. So, you know, that's another thing that and then it is a ripple effect, because the people that are big fans of golf see what we do on TV and they try to emulate what we do.
Right.
And then the normal, you know, amateur rounds of golf become even slower also.
So I think on the PGA Tour, if you're playing a slow round, that what they should do is hire John Daly to drive out with his crazy pants on and go to the green, and he punches you in the face. That way it gets John back into the PGA fold. It's all televised, so you're humiliated.
I'm all for that, because I know I'm not getting punched.
He just punches you in the face.
No. I like that.
You can read lips on TV, and you see on a short putt after you putt out, you can see who's someone who says, "I'll wait" or "I'll go." Like, you can see it happen.
Yeah,
I don't think I've ever heard you say, "I'll wait."
Yeah, I mean, there's
maybe to a fault.
Sometimes, but, you know, exactly. Yeah, you try to play very fast. Play fast, and you'll miss a couple. But anyways.
All right, let's switch gears and talk. So you took 10 days off. You pick up your clubs, and you said something off air that I thought was funny, that you started hitting it better.
Yeah.
what was with that, and what are you looking to do now in the reboot, getting ready for this next run, including the PGA?
Yeah, so I think it was a nice, this 10 days, it was a nice reflection period for me. And I mentioned to you off air, the app, the Masters app, I could go back and watch every shot that I hit.
What did you go back and want to see?
I wanted to see some of the bad shots that I hit. You know, I missed the green right on 11, 3 days out of four.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was to guard the water left? Or?
Yeah, but I mean, it's still, there's something happening there. Okay. That, you know, if I was more comfortable with my swing, that's not going to happen. I missed the 17th fairway right 3 out of the 4 days. Mm-hmm. There was just a few shots that I lost right. So I went back and looked at those, and I saw something in my swing that I hadn't seen for
quite
a while.
What did you see? Just out of curiosity.
So I was coming up out of my posture. So basically what happens is, you know, I'll take the club back, and instead of staying in my like spine angle, I'll lift up, which means my shoulders turn more flat.
Yeah.
The club gets behind me. And then from there, the club has to travel a much longer way to get back down to where it needs to. So instead of it being more of an up and down motion, you know, on plane, which it should be, it was more rotation.
Yeah, right.
And then if I open up
sounds
too
like
early,
that'd be a pull. Okay, then it's you're
then,
open.
Then you're open, and then you're leaving the club face open.
Why did that happen on 11 and 17? Why in those moments? Do you think?
So I think what happens is, if your mechanics aren't correct, they start to break down under pressure or under more difficult circumstances.
Okay.
So, you know, a tough second shot on 11 where you know you can't go left, you know, and that's exactly what you said. You'd think that that would be a pull.
Yeah.
And in some cases it does cause a pull. So if you have both left and right in your swing, what's going to happen? You're going to go, no, I'm going to hit it right.
In a bell,
Yeah, so that's basically what happened. So it was nice for me to have that reflection and be like, you know, I think I know what I need to do. I need to steepen my shoulder plane. I need to get the club a bit more in front of me on the way back. And then from there, it's going to be much easier for me from point A to point B, from the top of the backswing to impact. The club doesn't have to travel as far. I'm relying less on timing and relying more on just good sound mechanics.
And those sound mechanics, when put under pressure, that muscle is going to repeat.
That's
just going to be
there.
That's
going to replicate time after time.
Yeah, just going to go.
Yeah.
So you've been working on that, and you feel like that's
working
in a better
place
now.
Working on that, staying in my posture. For the first couple of days, it felt like almost like I'm trying to go down, like trying to get my nose to touch the ball.
That's what it feels like for you?
That's what it felt like. But then my coach Michael Bannon's been here the last couple of days, and we've really seen some progress, which is exciting.
Let's talk about Bethpage. I mean, this is an old track, Long Island. So it's a big park.
Mm.
It's 83 years old. It's long. It's public.
Mm.
It's cold.
It's sometimes.
It's all the. What is your what's your take on Bethpage, Black?
So, 2009 U.S. Open was my first U.S. Open, and it was at Bethpage. It was my first time ever playing in New York in front of New Yorkers. And I was excited for it because I had watched the U.S. Open in 2002 that Tiger won. And another big hero of mine played with him in that final group, which was Sergio Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
And Sergio was I love Sergio. He was European and passionate and all that stuff. So I was excited to get there and play. We actually had a really bad week of weather. The tournament looked like it could have ended on Tuesday. It could have been a Tuesday if it ended up ending on Monday. And I top 10'd it. And I was really, you know, that was my first US Open, and it was a great experience. And I loved the golf course. I mean, I think Bethpage is one of the best major venues that we play. And I think bringing these major championships to public venues has been a really good idea from the organizations.
What do you remember about the New York crowds in 09?
Oh, nuts. Just so there was a rain delay either the Thursday, Friday, and I remember teeing off the 10th hole late. It was like maybe 5 o'clock, but you know, the people hadn't seen any golf all day, but they stayed and they were drinking and whatever and having beers, and then you come back out at 5 and everyone is like just a mess basically.
Right.
And I remember, you know, they don't hold back. You know, at that time I had like the big hair and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, I heard this guy on the back of the 10th tee being like, "Hey, get a haircut. Yeah. Get a haircut."
Yeah, welcome to New York.
And I know.
That's actually a pretty good New York.
I know. And yeah. I turned around and this guy's got hair down to his shoulders. I'm like, what?
Screw you. Get a haircut.
Yeah, exactly.
Hi, Pot. I'm Kevin.
And then there was another time on one tee box where, you know, they're just so excited to see some golf and see the guys back out there. And this guy's cheering. We're walking up the tee box. And he comes, like, he was on the rope line, and he goes off, he walks away from the rope line, throws up.
Oh, yeah.
Is sick, comes back to the rope line, and starts cheering again.
Yes.
I'm like, is this
We're resilient New Yorkers, aren't we?
Is this what, like, golf is like in the United States? Like, right. I hadn't really played much.
Well, there's two types of drunks. There's the Waste Management Open, there's the Phoenix drunks, which are like college kids and people in their young 20s who are just hammered and who want to give you bro hugs. And
yeah.
And there's that. And then there's the New York drunk, which is just straight up like...
It's just...
And they love Phil Mickelson.
They
it's
do.
Yeah,
but Phil embraces them and embraces that. And that's such a cool thing. So I'm excited to go back to Bethpage.
Right. So you feel ready for it?
I do, yeah.
Anything else you're kind of trying to shore up right now?
No, you know, I think as
well... What do you think will be the keys for you to do well at the PGA this year?
You need to hit it and play. If you can hit it on the... It's a long golf course. If you can put it in play off the tee and hit it from the fairway, you're going to have a good chance. Once you start missing fairways there, I'm not sure how thick the rough's going to be, because I think the setup for the PGA Championship compared to the US Open is going to be slightly different. I've played three tournaments at Bethpage, one US Open and two of the FedEx Cup events.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think PGA are going to set it up more like the PGA Tour events, where they'll want sort of 10 or 12 under to win. So even if you hit it in the rough, it won't be like you can't get it to the green, but you just lose so much control.
Right.
So I think hitting it in play, hitting it on the fairway is going to be a big thing.
The Rory and Carson podcast is just one of many original shows available at golfpass.com. Looking for a quick fix to help your game? Our original series, Breaking 100, is your answer. Learn more with a 7-day free trial on golfpass.com.
All right, Rory, new segment on the podcast called News to Us. Producer Ryan, why don't you explain how this is going
to
work?
So News to Us is going to be kind of a smattering of things we found across the World Wide Web.
Yep.
And just hitting you guys with some
None
news.
Of which either of us know what you're going to bring up.
Exactly. Right. This is just completely out of left field. So the first one, we're going over to the UK, something near and dear to Rory's heart. But Harry Kane, a couple weeks ago, announced that he wants to become an NFL kicker at the end of his career.
Who?
Harry Kane.
He's the best English soccer player.
He's a good-looking bastard, and he would do well in the NFL. But, Rory, news to you?
Not news to me. No, I knew this. I know he's visited the New England Patriots a couple of times and kicked there. And I think, I mean, how awesome would that be, that story? You know, a soccer player, really, you know, one of the best in the world right now, finishes his career doing that and then transitions over and is a kicker for the NFL. That'd be sort
How
of...
How has that never happened before?
I don't know. I know a lot of... I'm friends with a few rugby guys, and whenever their rugby careers end, they try to come over to the NFL and... But you know,
there's some punters, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, even in high school football, most of the kickers come from the soccer team. Like, it just seems like illogical.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you don't have to be that big or that strong to be a kicker.
I guess what the Patriots need, another really good-looking athlete on their team to be successful.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
What's the sport, Rory, that if you were to become a Harry Kane and take on something else, would it be soccer for you? That you think you might have a shot at playing professionally or at a high level?
Maybe 10 years ago I would have said that.
Yeah.
Soccer?
Yeah. Maybe. I was okay. I wasn't like I think I could have been okay. I just, golf is what sort of took up so much of my time, but yeah, I would say football or soccer would have been the one that I would have went towards.
All right, next
topic, Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is all the rage right now. We're as we're taping this, I think tomorrow night is episode 3 of 6. It's all the rage. So in the lead up to the final season, HBO challenges Game of Thrones fans to find 6 thrones hidden across the world. And they put a webcam where you could see people.
Get
Carson,
a job.
News to you. Good idea, bad idea.
It's a terrible idea. I've seen 0 frames of Game of Thrones. I'm sure it's an excellent.
Neither have I.
I've never seen one lick of it.
I think we're like the only 2 people have not watched Game of Thrones.
I don't knock it. I travel a lot. I just started watching Snowfall on FX, which is the story of bringing crack cocaine epidemic into Los Angeles. It's really good. I wanted to get in on Game of Thrones because I need stuff for the airplane to watch, but it's just too science fiction-ish. Like, once 100%. It gets into sort of dragons and stuff, it lost me. It seemed too epic in scope. I was too intimidated to go in. Therefore, I just never have.
Yeah, I was saying I gravitate towards real life situations. You know, whether that's legal dramas or
documentary series.
I'm a big fan of Billions.
Right. I love Billions. That's my show. Billions is my show.
Yeah. So I like that stuff. Yeah. When it gets a little, sci-fi.
The period pieces.
Yeah. I'm okay even with that. But
I'm thinking Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
And
I mean, my wife's huge Downton Abbey
fan.
Okay.
I take that back. Sorry.
Yeah. But.
Let's go back to
it's a sci-fi thing, I think, that I've never been into, like, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, me neither. Never seen one thing of it.
Yeah.
Harry Potter, sorry.
I read the Harry Potter books. I like, you know, that sort of feels like my childhood. Yeah. So
I like Sons of Anarchy. Anything with drugs, motorcycles, gun running, espionage,
Breaking Bad.
CIA, love Breaking
Bad.
Yeah,
I really like Breaking Bad.
But to your point, the fact that this Game of Thrones thing has become so big and now there are these challenges all over the world, I mean, I think it just gets to a point where it's like, how much more marketing do you need?
I think it's a little dangerous, considering the...
It's like the Amazing Race of Game of Thrones.
What if two crazy Game of Thrones fans like end up at one of these thrones at the same time and they're literally fighting over the throne? Like,
people are
rabid about imitating life.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
In fairness, though, it's brought a lot of... tourism to Northern. They shoot a lot of Game of Thrones in Northern Ireland, and it's like, you know, you can go do Game of Thrones tours. People put on the big, you know, jackets and whatever, and they do the whole thing. So it's been pretty good for my country. Which
I think people get too fanatic about all of these things. You know, this Avengers Endgame is like the movie.
I liked the first Captain America. I liked the first Iron Man. I liked some of them, but then it's gotten so. So far down the line.
What are Galaxy of the Guardians doing in a movie with Iron Man?
But I can't. It was so. I saw a thing last night. It was the biggest opening night ever for a movie. It made $60 million domestically just on a Thursday night.
There was a guy in Hong Kong. It was in the news this morning. Who, when he left seeing Avengers Endgame, he ran out of the theater and yelled to the people who were about to go in. Apparently, there's some crazy ending to it. And
he spoiled it.
He spoiled it.
Did he?
And he got the crap beat out of him.
Oh,
and
no.
The cops came, and it was a big whole thing.
Well, Sean McCoy was doing that on Twitter as well.
Yes, and there was another athlete who was doing. Yeah. Who was ruining Endgame. So we don't want to ruin it. All right. Any more news to us?
Last one, and this is from the ripped from the headlines of Lee Westwood's Twitter page.
Oh wow!
Why golfers have more pesticides in their body? According to a study done by somewhere over in the UK, the wealthy have higher levels of pesticides in their bodies because they play golf. They also have more mercury in their systems because they eat a lot of seafood. That's according to a leading scientist who briefed MPs yesterday on toxic chemicals in everyday products. Rory, news to you?
Wow. I don't think you have to be wealthy to play golf or to eat seafood. That's sort of... I mean,
I don't know. They're pretty 1%-y.
You think?
They're pretty 1%-y. Yes. I mean, golf's not... let's be honest. I mean, it's a little bit... It's like the rich kings getting the gout. I mean, it's a lot of...
Too much of a good thing.
It's a lot of acid.
But, you know, does that... You know, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Lee commented that golfers just need to stop licking their balls. That would be the fix.
Wow.
I would be prone to that from time to time. I lick my balls sometimes.
Oh, you do? Do you really?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Can we isolate that?
Hopefully we can't. We won't take that out of context. I'll make sure that doesn't get taken out of context.
If I could lick my balls, I would. I'd never leave the house. All right. Well, we got to end this thing. But I want to mention, I don't know when this airs in comparison to your birthday, but happy birthday.
Thank you.
You got a big 3-0 coming. How are you feeling
30.
About that?
It's just, it goes so quick. You know, I think life on tour and the life that I lead, you live week to week and you're always looking 4 months ahead, 5 months ahead. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I only turned 18 a few years ago, and all of a sudden I'm 30. It's
buddy,
like
that's
it's a
how
big
it goes.
Deal.
You'll be 40 tomorrow.
I know.
You know, as quickly
but
as.
But I'm excited. I think I can. You know, 30's the time to. You know, you're really coming into your own, and you sort of know who you are, and you've got a lot of great things going on in your life, and that's where I feel like I'm at. So I'm excited.
Well, good. Here we got you a little something.
Oh, thank you.
And by that I mean producer Ryan. I have no idea what's in this bag that I just handed you,
can
but
I,
it's,
can
it's
I,
wrapped.
Can I see
oh,
it? Can
open
I
it up. You're gonna love it.
All right, let's see what it is for Rory's 30th. I wanted to get you.
We got you leftover Easter candy from CVS.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank
there's
you.
Some Easter candy. That's a
Hotheads.
That's a cheap podcast gift okay. if I ever saw one.
Budget's
some,
low.
Some Warheads. Those are super sour.
Oh wow.
This is the piece de resistance.
Okay. We've got some sort of apparel here.
Someone actually made this online.
here's a shirt with wow. The many faces.
Rory through
Rory.
The years.
Rory through the years on a shirt.
I'm gonna wear that on my birthday.
That is amazing.
I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna go out to dinner in this shirt.
Oh my God, that is incredible.
I like that.
Should we shout out who made this masterpiece?
I have no idea. It was on eBay.
It's Rory's face all over a t-shirt, yeah. Very colorful from the various decades of your life. There's only been three of them.
Is this
but
an improvement?
You are on top of your game right now.
No, thank you.
Yes.
We thought you would like
wow,
that.
Wow, look at that.
What are you going to do for your 30th? Will you do a quiet thing with Erica, or will you go to Baker's Bay with a bunch of boys?
No, I'm playing a golf tournament. So it's the Saturday of Quail Hollow. So hopefully I'll go out shoot 65.
Perfect.
Be leading the tournament, and then just go for a nice dinner wearing my new t-shirt.
Maybe you'll shoot 30-30.
I like that.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be cool.
Amazing.
That would be. I like that.
Good all right,
vibes.
Buddy. Listen, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. Thanks
good,
for coming
good luck
on
at the PGA and happy birthday
appreciate
to you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Time.